Hey everyone, welcome back to Cash and Burn. Today's a super exciting episode. We are celebrating 1 year since we kicked off the show, and what an incredible year it's been. Some amazing guests with definitely some interesting and compelling stories, and certainly a lot of lessons learned from what they've all gone through and survived and built incredible companies. So a big thank you to all of our listeners. Thanks for listening every week and all the feedback. A big thank you to our team. It takes a village to put this show together, and they do an incredible job. Today's episode, we're going to be focusing on a key question that I ask everyone on the show, which is, what should founders, execs in SaaS or software be focused on right now? And we highlighted the ones that we thought were the most compelling. So please enjoy, and thanks for watching.
That was all through last year when everything was great, low interest rates. This year has been a challenging year for Pavilion. And, you know, I had this whole story about how I got all the success and everything's fantastic. And this year has been really challenging. And I have to remind myself of the exact same lesson, which is, don't get fixated on the stuff. You know, the stuff will come whenever it comes. Focus on, do you like what you're doing? Are you creating a sustainable business? And I know you and I both believe in that. You know, cash flow positive if you can, good unit economics. If you can create sustainability so that you can do it forever, you can do it as long as you need to, right? You're not working from 6 a.m. to 11 p.m. You're working when you want to work and you're delegating effectively. And if you can do that, you can do it forever. And then it doesn't matter when the thing shows up, and it increases the likelihood. You'll be amazed at how quickly it does show up when you let go of needing it to happen. And that, I got to tell myself that this year, because, you know, honestly, for the end of last year through the first part of this year, really through recently, I was like, you know, when am I going to sell this thing? Now I've raised this money for it. When am I going to exit? And now I'm just like, you know what? I can't, that thinking is contaminating me. And I just need to build a profitable business that helps people, and the rest will take care of itself.
It's interesting you mentioned the Industrial Revolution. So, you know, as I mentioned, when I'm not foundering, I'm teaching this class on technology and geopolitical risk at Johns Hopkins. And, you know, one of the fascinating things that's sort of been an aha moment for me in designing that course has been looking at the history of technology and how it's impacted different societies and states and relationships between different countries. And from the steam engine to, you know, the printing press to the internet, whatever you want to look at, whatever constitutes technology and an innovation for you, I don't think that we've seen as fundamental of a shift across so many different areas of underlying technology as we're going through today. Be it blockchain, be it AI, be it just computing power, this is a real paradigm shift in what technology can and will do for our societies. And so in that context, of course, as founders, we should all be focused on innovating and building products in that space. But we should also be thinking much more broadly about how do we want all these underlying technology shifts to come together? There are going to be use cases of AI in making weapons far more efficient, targeted, surgical against enemy combatants, to using AI to combat and prevent corruption and fraud, to even using AI to replace, like I mentioned earlier, swaths of industries where services are either very slow and cause havoc. And maybe even, you know, patient experience is fundamentally changing. Whatever that might be, I think this is a time for founders to go beyond just building products and building businesses and actually having a voice on, hey, we need a whole new constitution on how we think about technology and what it needs to do and where it can go in our societies. Because that understanding and that operator mindset is not going to come from legislators or academics. It's going to come from people that are in the thick of building this stuff on a daily basis.
As you know, I think being CEO is a very, very hard job. And there's two things just listening to you that are hard about it. One, you need to live in the future. So that's what I always tell CFOs. If you want to help your CEO, go live in the future, because that's where they live, right? They trust the management team to live in the current quarter, right? If you can't trust your management team to go make quarters and you would spend all your time helping to make quarters, problem, right? So, and CFO, if you want to be the business partner to the CEO, go live in the future, right? Get off the back of the boat, analyzing the wake, and get on the bridge and look forward. The other one is related, but that CEOs need to, there's a lot of stuff you need to selectively ignore / delegate and focus on what really matters. And I like what you just said, which is what really matters is coming into 2024 strong, right? I can trust my team. We're going to set up a budget. We'll trust the team to execute 2023. But I'm probably the only person who's going to worry about this, right? Maybe the board will too. But I need to worry about teeing us up for 2024. And that will, in my mind, force you to focus on what not to worry about, right? And also what to worry about. And I think in the end, I'll do a quick plug for a book I'm reading called The Crux. It's Richard Rummel's second strategy book. And he's basically arguing the CEO's job is to get to the crux of the problem and focus only on the crux of the problem, which is something I wasn't particularly good at. I'd be like, oh, I can focus on the crux and I'd get that, but I'd also try and do everything. And I think he's a really good book. So I'll be writing about it soon, but that's where I'm coming from.
You got to realize you got to do the hard thing. So thinking about profitability is very important. And that might mean you need to make one plan that when you look at it, it cuts to the bone and gets your company to a place in which you will live forever, even if you have to take your arm off and your knee off and you'll never be able to walk again and you'll never be able to, you know, whatever, this, that, and the other. It is something that you probably need in your back pocket. I mean, when you and I were talking the other day, you know, there was news coming up about Ukraine and Russia. I mean, there is a potential for a world war in 2023. There is not, it's a non-zero, you know, likelihood. Okay. And if that happens, and if you need to go and dust off the plan that says, here's how we're going to get to profitability and survive a crazy time, you do that. Put it, tuck it away, put it under everything. You don't need it, but you should know it. And I think that once you know what that is, you can figure out all of the step gates as to we should spend more money if X happens. We should spend more money if Y happens. We should be aggressive if it goes this direction or if the recession is not as bad as it should be. But if you don't know what that base kind of level is, that really ugly scenario is, I think you're doing yourself a complete disservice.
And so focus is the right word. Which is to say, now is the time to exceed expectations and go for it, in my opinion. Unorthodoxy is, has been proven to be one of those things that people like to look at, right? So, you know, be the flaming car wreck on fire or be the fireworks show or whatever, you know, analogy you want to pick, but do something that's a little bit out of the ordinary and get people's attention. Because there's a lot of case studies out there right now of people who are mastering the content game, they're mastering the gifting game, they're mastering the unique, you know, digital or in-person experiences game. They're doing things that are out of left field. They're not hiring 5 or 10 SDRs and trying to go, you know, cold call their way to victory. They're going after it with a force magnitude that's different through a different channel. And my opinion right now is that with all the talent that's flooding onto the market, with all of the you know, chaos and confusion, we're going to have the opportunities that pop up where a little bit of capital applied in the right way with the right team is going to have 100 to 1,000x returns, right? Things like this podcast, things like, you know, going viral for a post on LinkedIn or, you know, things that don't cost you very much money and don't cost you very much time. But you have to remain focused on, you know, the endeavor. That's where I think the startups right now, you know, the people that are listening have the greatest opportunity, right? Enfranchise your teams to go and take the wild bets a little bit because you don't have that much to lose and you have a whole hell of a lot to gain in terms of, you know, mind share and eyeballs.
have the data to make rational decisions. I think, you know, very early on, we put enterprise, it was a very expensive cost to put enterprise level analytics, product analytics, and financial analytics, financial modeling in place from day one. So we were able to have a historical trend of, okay, if we make this decision, it's going to impact X, Y, or Z. And that was really, really important to have the visibility. If you don't have that visibility, that's step one. And it's not just because I'm on your podcast and I'm aware of your product. I would say this if I was on any podcast. And I think that it just really shows the value for the problem that you're solving. Because if you don't have the right indicators, it's all for naught, right? You can't manage cash in a meaningful way. You can't manage burn in a meaningful way. You don't have the right indicators to go, okay, well, what does acquisition look like there? If I turn off PPC, how is that going to affect full funnel, right? If I turn off, you know, $10,000 in paid spend, how does that affect adoption? If you can't answer that, that is a significant problem. And I think a lot of times we go, just build it and we're going to build it and we'll figure it out. The metrics, that is problematic. And it'll lead to irrational decisions that will have long-term tailwind effects that you can't even see or understand now. And so for us, the way in which we're managing through it is through great analytics, through great data. You know, Jeff and I, we spend probably an obnoxious and obsessive amount of time. It's actually probably one of our biggest arguments that we have is like, we're seeing these things trend down. What do we need to do? So you can't overreact to it. But having that data is a really it's everything. I'll just say, I was going to say some other thing, but it's everything.
The first thing you have to prepare for is, you know, a down cycle and a looming recession, which I think we all still believe is happening. I'll tell you, I'm a little surprised we're not in it yet. That certainly has been a surprise, which I think is also a lesson in and of itself. You got to prepare, but then you've also got to execute towards certain, you know, what the current reality is. But, you know, look, first of all, you know, I think everybody's got to be making sure that you've got some cash buffer right now, especially cash burning companies, because you know, receivables and things like that can turn on you very quickly. So, you know, that's certainly one thing that we're doing right now is making sure that we're building the right buffer for next year to weather whatever storm comes. Interestingly, you know, we happen to be in an industry where we likely should see some increased business off of a downturn, right? As an example, because some of our customers are collections types of organizations, most companies are going to be looking to try to increase their collections efforts during that type of a down cycle. But, you know, look, that doesn't always happen as well. You know, I mean, I'll tell you, a lot of our industry peers in the space that I'm in, Genesis, as an example, just had, you know, rather significant layoff and a further clarification of their strategy. We've all seen big tech earnings recently, a lot more coming out next week, but we've had some this week. And certainly, you know, there is softness. You're seeing, you know, elongated sales cycles. It's certainly something that we've seen. Our peers have announced that they're seeing the same thing. So, you know, I think you gotta, you know, really be scrappy. You gotta focus on deals right now. Make sure you've got buyers that still have budget that are still committed and be, you know, closer than you've ever been to your key deals for a particular quarter and preserving cash. You know, those are kind of the two biggest things that, you know, we're certainly doing right now. If, you know, if I were a cash burning company, I would certainly be trying to reduce burn at the moment to, you know, sort of see how the next couple of quarters play out.
I'd say three big things. First, and I think this is right now they should be focused on, and I think this is going to be probably pretty timeless advice too. But especially right now, you need to be focused on building a great business, right? Who's my customer? Where's my product market fit? What are my unit economics, right? So what I mean by that is how much is it costing us to acquire a customer? How much profit, not just revenue, is that customer bringing? What's the amount of time it takes for me to pay back my customer acquisition costs, right? If you're doing that, like we spent a lot of time about raising money, but my other five companies became very large and I never raised a penny, right? Because we had really good unit economics and we knew how to acquire and grow customer value. And so that's a really important skill, is being able to run a good business and being really honest with yourself about where those metrics actually are. When money is easily being pumped into businesses and systems, it lets you be a little less efficient. But right now, when things are tighter, really got to focus on that. The second is, you know, making sure that you have the funding you need for your business, right? Right now, it's a unique funding climate. You know, the metrics from Q1 of 2023, I think were compared to like 2017 and how little funding there was compared to the previous years. I think if you need to raise money right now, make peace with the fact that valuations are going to be lower than they were. and do what you can to make sure that you have an operational plan that's exciting. Taking money, I think, at a little less isn't the worst thing, as long as it enables you to build the business the way that it needs to be built and execute on the opportunity. And then the third thing that I'd say is that from an operational perspective, I'm a firm believer that companies that learn how to use their data and leverage automation and AI over the coming years. So automation, especially important, even when you're small and just getting started. And then AI, once you're mid-sized to larger, you're going to outperform, right? Building the capability of being agile as an organization, using the scientific method of saying, hey, here's an idea that we have about how we can improve our customer acquisition cost, or the amount of time it takes for a customer to, you know, make their second purchase from their first purchase. Do you have the tools that you need to be able to test these ideas, to report on these ideas? It's not okay, I think, for you to not have the agility, not have the tools, and not have the reporting. And that's where I think a tool like Place that allows you to take your financial model and really understand that and understand the inputs and understand different potential futures for your business and how your sales pipelines are tracking, you know, towards your success is so important as well. So, you know, get the right tools to get the right data in your hands to be able to make fast decisions, and then get the right technology and team in place around you to the time from when you make a decision to the time to where it's implemented is as short as possible, because speed matters.
Yeah, just I always say this to our team, like I don't spend my time looking in the rearview mirror because I'm going to hit a wall right in front of me if I do that, right? And what I mean by that is I can only control what I can control. Right. We can only control what we can control. Right. If the economy drops away tomorrow and your business like falters because of that, well, there wasn't much like there's not a lot you can really do about that. Right. You might be able to do bits and save a few percent here and there. But if it's a global like economic crisis that happens, it happens. Right. And it's hard for humans to kind of really like rationalize that type of process. That just happens. Right. Just bad luck. Right. And so I would advise anybody, and I spend a lot of time talking to teams here about just looking forward and not really worrying about what everybody else is doing or saying. Like, I don't really read the news at all. I don't have social media that I really follow at all, other than maybe LinkedIn, and I'm a post. I don't necessarily read on it. I kind of like that. Like, that's a good relationship for me with social media. I just don't buy into all of the like bad news sells, right? That's the way I look at it. And if it was my job to sell bad news, I'd write really bad news stories. People would like doom scroll through it all day and that sort of be. And I see a lot of business owners who really, it really distracts them, I think, from actually just doing the core stuff that they should do and the next product update that they should do. And they get too busy worrying about what the other competitors are doing. And I think if you're in that and you're really worried about what your competition are doing, you've got competitors who aren't worried about you. They are just doing their thing, right? They've realized this and they are in that space. And it's very difficult to kind of then start to try and get out of that space, right? But you can do it. So I'd advise, like, that would be a big thing that we do here. We just don't really get involved with what the competition are necessarily doing at all. We speak to our customers, who are the buyers, who are the users. They're the people that we'll listen to because it's them ultimately that it's impacting, and yeah, our software solution. So we spend a lot of time with customers doing that. The other thing that I'd say is big for us right now is about building just a robust business process. So we're currently, and it's been a really great process, we're mapping out all of our process, you know, like one huge Google sheet with every bit of the process and everything that happens at every point, every touch point. How can we improve that touch point? Let's get together as a team. So we're doing a lot of that type of stuff. I think a lot of businesses buy a lot of technology and then try and like force that in to fix broken processes. And, you know, I just don't think you can throw new technology at broken processes and expect it to work. But I see that all the time. And it will be, oh, we need to buy whatever it might be, some database software so we can get people's phone numbers and things like that. Okay, great. But like, what's the process of phoning people? How does your telephony software work? Is that plugged in? Like, you need to understand the whole process. So we're going through that exercise currently, and that's having kind of transformative effects on the business. And I think that, yeah, they'd probably be the two big things right now, I think, that people should really focus on.
The place, Sacramento, California. The scene, I'm sitting in my season tickets at the time at the Sacramento Kings. Now, disclaimer, I'm a huge Golden State Warrior fan, but at the time was living in the Sacramento area, and I love sports, love the NBA. And so I also had a side hustle fan thing going with the Kings. I just like going to the games. So at that time, and in many basketball arenas around the country, somebody came up with a promotion where they would bring out a halftime shooter. Their sponsor would be some local car dealership. And if the person chosen as halftime shooter makes the shot, they win a car or a truck. Okay. So my sister happens to be sitting next to me. And as the banners are going around the arena saying, hey, halftime shooter sponsored by Folsom Lake Ford is the store in Folsom Lake Toyota. You win either a little Toyota pickup or a little Ford pickup. Okay, great. So my sister turns to me and she says, hey, Dave, she says, if you ever got picked to be the halftime shooter, what would you do? And I said, oh, there's no question. I said, listen, most of these guys make a huge mistake. They're going to do the classic, you know, jump shot type of a deal. And most of them fall woefully short. The ball falls right about the free throw line or just past it. And the whole crowd, 20,000 people, is just moaning as they are completely and utterly humiliated, right? And they get shuffled off of the court with their head sunk down. Well, I said, I would do an old school set shot because you're going to get more power. You can control the direction, blah, blah, blah. As I mid-sentence, Brandon, an usher leans over and he says, hey, are you sitting in row in seat 21? I said, I am. He said, you're tonight's halftime shooter, right? And I'm like, ah, right? So I'm in a suit with dress shoes that have leather soles. You know what the mortal enemy, the kryptonite of a dress suit with leather soles? A basketball court. It's like an ice skating rink. And I just thinking in my head, not only am I going to fall woefully short of the basket, but I might fall down at the same time, right? Now, thankfully, this was pre-TikTok and pre-YouTube, but still would have been hugely humiliating. So I get this flash, this idea. I run upstairs. My buddy Mark has seats up there. I go up to Mark. He said, what size are you, right? So he says, I'm a 10. I said, he's a half size smaller than my foot is. And I said, give me your tennis shoes. And he said, why? And I said, I'm the halftime shooter. Now, let me back up. Everybody in my section, when they told me I was the halftime shooter, they all, you know what they all said? Don't make an air ball. Bro, don't embarrass our section. Whatever you do, hit something. Hit the basket, hit the rim, hit the backboard, but don't air ball. I go up to Mark. I need your shoes. How come I'm the halftime shooter? So, bro, he said, you got the shoes, but don't embarrass us. He said, don't do an air ball. Make sure you hit something. Hit the backboard, right? Okay, all right. So then I go downstairs. The usher says, 2 minutes or 5 minutes before halftime, go to this elevator at this section. I go to this section, Brandon, no elevator. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. So I start asking all the ushers around, hey, where's this elevator? None of them have ever heard of it before. Like it's in some third dimension, right? And now I'm freaking out. I'm already, you know, I got anxiety ridden about being this halftime shooter. Don't make an air ball, hit something. And so finally I give up and I go down the aisle right at where the free throw line is, down that aisle, and about five rows from the court, you know who's sitting there on the aisle? As I'm walking down there, I hear a voice, hey, what are you doing down here? I turn around, it's my boss, the car dealer, right? And Larry says, what are you doing down here? Like, what are you doing down here? You should be up with the rest of the pros, up in the, right? And so I say, well, I'm the halftime shooter. He says, don't embarrass the dealership. You know, make sure you hit something. I'm like, okay. He says, hey, at least hit the backboard. All right, I get it. I go down, I find the security guy at the bottom says, what are you doing? I'm the halftime shooter. He says, oh, bro, don't do an air ball. I get it. Okay, I go into the tunnel, right? They get me into the tunnel. There's a bunch of little dogs that are jumping over little things. Ridiculous, preposterous, this halftime show with little dogs that shouldn't be doing this kind of work. But anyway, so they finish that, and this woman escorts me out to the court at the scorer's table. Now, I remember the announcer, play-by-play, was a guy named Jerry at the time, and he says, are you tonight's halftime shooter? And I said, yes. He says, great. What's your name? And I tell him, and he says, hey, don't shoot an air ball. And I said, oh, okay, thank you for that sage advice. So, and by the way, they don't let you even touch the basketball. They don't want you comfortable. So they usher me out to the court. I'm in half court and I'm thinking about these things. I've got my goofy tennis shoes on that don't match my suit, right? I haven't taken a shot in God knows when. And I've told my sister exactly what I would do so I wouldn't do what these other numbskulls would do. And all I'm thinking of is hit the backboard, hit the backboard, hit the backboard. Everybody just kept saying, hit the backboard, don't airball. I launched the shot, Brandon, and that little square above the rim, I hit the backboard exactly to the right of that square. The basketball hit just to the right of that square. If I was 9 inches to the left, that's going in, and I'm driving home in a car or a truck. But I didn't. I hit the backboard. You know why? Because everybody said, focus on the backboard. Don't airball. Hit the backboard. And as I hit the backboard, as it bounced off, my immediate reaction was, yes! Followed by, oh shit, I was supposed to make the shot. And you know what you get for hitting the backboard, Brandon? You get a $100 gift certificate for some meat at the local grocery store. There's no car, there's no truck. So here's my advice to founders, to entrepreneurs out there, to anybody that's in that position. Okay, don't focus on the exit. Just don't focus on the exit. Make sure that you're focused on the right thing, not the wrong thing. Don't be focused on the Ferrari. Don't be focused on the boat. Don't be focused on the big house. Be focused on what you need to do to make the basket. Because the whole thing was, I was supposed to make the basket. Not one person said, make the basket, David. And I assimilated that and did exactly what they said. And I learned a lesson from that. That miss of that $13,000 or $15,000 car at the time has made me a lot of money over the years. So I hope it helps your entrepreneurs as well.